Tony Morales.
You might want to let them all get out.
Right.
All right, I think we're ready to proceed with the next case then.
May it please the court. My name is Mick Wojnarowski. I am a staff attorney with the Washington Appellate Project. It is my privilege to represent Mr. Domingo Montemorales this morning. If I may reserve 3 minutes, please.
3 minutes. And I would invite counsel to address the motion to strike in their argument if they wish.
Oh, very good, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Your Honor, switching gears to what I think is a pretty straightforward criminal case on this morning's calendar, I'd first like to talk about the motion to suppress, which should have been granted below. That error requires reversal for a new trial. Second, I'd like to discuss the question of the sufficiency of the evidence with respect to Mr. Domingo Montemorales' rape conviction, which should be set aside for insufficient evidence.
With regard to the motion to suppress, the findings and conclusions, I don't think there was any exceptions taken. And in there, trial court pointed out that the medics thought that Mr. Montemorales needed medical assistance. He didn't want medical assistance, apparently.
Correct.
Should the officers just have ignored that?
Yes.
And just let him bleed?
Yes. Your Honor, there's no indication.
What are you relying on for that proposition?
Well, Your Honor, there's, first of all, each one of us has a fundamental right to bodily integrity. That includes a constitutional right to refuse medical treatment. There is no indication that Mr. Montemorales was in danger of his life at that moment in time. That's not what the record shows. It shows that he was injured, that he may have been bleeding about the head and face. But he most certainly had an absolute constitutional right to decline medical treatment, as would any one of us. And second of all, there never was an argument made.
Did he decline treatment when he got there? He did not.
He did, Your Honor. I believe the record shows that he was declining medical treatment throughout his interaction with Officer McLeod.
No, I'm talking about when he got to the hospital. Because they did treat him.
Over his objection.
At the hospital?
Yes, Your Honor.
So while they were treating him, he was objecting?
Yes, Your Honor. That's my understanding of what the record is. I will pore over my brief and find the pin site to what I believe supports that position. It's also noteworthy that when the officer moved Mr. Montemorales over to the hospital, he was handcuffed. He was moved there in this.
Wasn't that because we have unchallenged findings that he was not compliant?
Certainly he was not compliant with the officer. He didn't want to be detained and he didn't want to be arrested. And while that may be understandable that he was handcuffed, the law is clear, Your Honor, that handcuffing is one of the hallmarks of custodial arrest. Moreover, he was not just handcuffed at the scene, made to sit on the ground, had his pockets emptied. He was then put in the squad car, driven to a place where he did not want to go. He was handcuffed to the gurney at the hospital while the officer had the hospital staff clean him up and ultimately declare him fit for jail.
So I'm thinking about the cell phone video of this person in custody bleeding.
Yes.
With the argument that you make that the police officers essentially should ignore that because of bodily integrity.
Yes.
Okay. So this is not a Christian Scientist type of a situation, is it?
We don't know that.
Okay.
I mean, that's absent in the record. What's clear in the record is that Mr. Montemorales refused medical aid.
Okay.
And I think we stop at that point.
What should the officers have done, in your view, given his objection?
Well, Your Honor, What is critical about this case is that in all Terry cases, the government has the obligation to establish that the intrusion was it was lawful in its scope and its duration and its purpose. The purpose has to be investigatory. Once Mr. Montemorales is taken away from the scene where the witnesses are two blocks away and he's driven across town to a hospital and there's no effort by law enforcement to put the two people together, would you like to look at the suspect? Is that the guy? Once there's a failure on that part, what comes across is that this is not a stop that's investigatory in purpose. Under, I believe it's Wheeler, we have a Washington State case that authorized a brief transport of a suspect in a Terry situation to the burglary that were allegedly there was a burglary for a witness show up. That's proper procedure. That probably would have been okay. In the alternative, if the officer has a concern over, well, maybe I don't want this guy bleeding in the back of my squad car, he says he doesn't want bandages, bring the witnesses to him. It's not hard. The two blocks away. I think the movement under is cannot be overlooked here, and I think the state did that in its arguments on appeal, and the trial court, unfortunately, overlooked that aspect of the case as well below.
It does seem that everyone focused on the length of detention, but I don't
correct
read your challenge to be to the length of detention. It's the movement is what you're objecting to.
Well, the challenge is to the totality of the circumstances, totality of what the police did to Mr. Domingo Montemorales. Certainly the duration is an aspect of the case. I acknowledge that we would be in a weaker position if he had not been moved to the hospital and if he hadn't been made to go against his will, handcuffed in the squad car and handcuffed to the gurney while half an hour of time stretches by.
26 minutes.
I think it's pretty darn close, Your Honor. And Bray is limited to it to the temporal.
Well, each of these cases are fact specific.
Yes.
And so we do go to the totality of the circumstances. And I'm not sure that in this case there would be the need to have a child identify him in a show up. But you certainly, based on the unchallenged findings, have a chaotic situation. You have an officer who fortunately is fluent in Spanish who then is going and interviewing people while, as I understand it, Mr. Morales is at the hospital.
Your Honor, with respect to the witnesses, there were adult witnesses at the apartment that could have been brought to him.
So well, I don't think they saw what happened.
Well, they,
that was, I mean, that's the whole trial, and that gets to your sufficiency argument.
There are adult witnesses who would have said, that's the guy who was in the house, that's who I saw.
Well, they said that from the get-go. So that's not new information.
Your Honor, there is no authority that I have been able to locate that would justify moving someone from the scene of a crime, not for an investigatory purpose, with this level of intrusion that would be justified under Terry. If we go back to Terry v. Ohio, that is a detective with his nose to the wind who spies two would-be robbers casing a joint and pats them down for weapons. This is a long ways removed from that. And under Florida v. Royer, the movement of a suspect initially put into a so-called Terry detention is critically important to analyzing the question of whether that detention was transformed into a custodial arrest.
Okay. 3 minutes, everyone. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Bartlett, and I represent Skagit County for the state of Washington, the respondent. To jump straight to the argument that was made by counsel on the motion to suppress, it is a totality of the circumstances situation. And here we did have one officer on scene who was dealing with eight different witnesses, not all speaking the same language. We had the defendant who was bleeding from his head, who the officer, when he was the first one on the scene, directed to stay seated. Mr. Montar Morales chose not to stay seated. He ignored the directions of the officer. So the officer then placed him into handcuffs for safety for a detention. Mr. Montar Morales was told that he was placed into detention for investigative purposes. While he was bleeding from the head, of course, the officer took initiative to call.
And that's investigative purposes related to the sexual assault.
Yes, Your Honor. When he arrived on the scene, the two witnesses who were restraining Mr. Montar Morales did say that there was an allegation that sister had been molested. And so at that point, it went from just a call to respond to a fight to also a call to respond to a sexual assault, a proposed sexual assault.
Well, that's what they were investigating.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is what they were investigating. So that actually took place two blocks away from the scene where Mr. Montar Morales was detained. So the officers had to get from that scene two blocks away to the scene.
Well, I don't think there's any dispute about that. I think the dispute is, well, you put Mr. Morales in the patrol car and you drove him to the hospital, and that vitiates the Terry stop. That's the argument.
Yes, Your Honor, and it does not vitiate the Terry stop because the cases that were cited to really speak to a prohibition on transporting for interrogative purposes. All of those are cases, even Royer, where the individual was taken from one area to another for the purposes of interrogation. That was not the purpose behind the movement of this individual. The purpose behind the movement was so that way he could seek medical aid. And that was on.
Well, but then we've heard he didn't want it.
Yes, Your Honor. But it goes back to the points made by Your Honors that what is the officer supposed to do in that situation when there is someone bleeding from his head? There has
well,
been.
Well, don't the medics say he needs medical treatment?
Yes, Your Honor. And when he acts on the advice that the medics say he needs medical treatment, he's being uncooperative, the officer then seeks to make sure that that medical treatment is received by Mr. Montar Morales.
Is there any case that says that you can remove someone from the scene that is totally not related to the investigatory purpose? Because I'm struggling with how taking him to the hospital had anything to do with it. It may have been the right thing to do. I get that. But how is that related at all to the investigatory purpose in this case?
It's not related to the investigatory purpose. However, the officers did continue to investigate throughout the time that medical treatment was being sought.
Well, so, he was still detained.
Yes.
So it does relate to the investigatory purpose. Otherwise, they'd just take him to the hospital and leave.
And you are correct. This was an uncooperative defendant who did seek to leave the scene. So in order to make sure that he was there, he was present for the investigation.
He was detained the whole time.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, he was. And because the officers were acting with due diligence throughout the course of the timing and throughout the course of the transport in order to get medical treatment, this was within the scope of a Terry stop, and it was for investigative purposes. And then at the point where there was enough to establish probable cause, then immediately, within 1 minute of the radio call coming in, Mr. Montar Morales was Mirandized and taken into custody.
Now that was probable cause to arrest for the molestation.
Yes, Your Honor. And so at that time they
had... Well, I'm a little confused about... So the motion to suppress had to do with suppressing the evidence that was obtained related to the burglary.
Yes.
So it does not appear as though that was the purpose for the initial detention under Terry.
Now, however, throughout the course of the investigation, it was once they went to 1916 Harrison Street where the sexual molestation took place that the officers then were able to discern that the neighboring unit, there was
a theft. Right, but they don't arrest him for that. They have probable cause to arrest for the molestation.
Yes. And then at that point, after the arrest is made, Mr. Montar Morales gets up from the gurney and essentially abandons property on the gurney that was found by the nurse. And then the nurse was the one who found the evidence of the theft. And this was after abandonment where there is no expectation of privacy to that. That then went to support the theft findings. And this is after the probable cause and the arrest has taken place.
Were the cards, the credit cards and other items from the residence, were they found on his person or were they found exclusively in the wallet?
Initially, there was a frisk for weapons and all of the items were removed, but then they were returned to Mr. Montar Morales' pockets. So then at the hospital, the credit cards and the wallet belonging to the victim of the theft and the residential burglary, that was all found after the abandonment at the hospital, and that was post the custodial arrest. So at that point, there was further evidence of a theft, which then led to the additional charges subsequent subsequent to the arrest.
I was just going to say, he was arrested for the sexual assault, mm-hmm. the rape.
Yes, that was the initial.
Was he ever actually arrested for the burglary?
I believe, yes, he was at, once they got to, I think it was post when they went to jail that he was then additionally charged with the burglary and the theft.
You characterized the separation between him and the wallet as abandonment. What does that mean?
There's no expectation of privacy to items that are abandoned.
I understand that, but why do you say that he abandoned whatever was dropped at the hospital?
It's just the way that it was found. It's just to illustrate the progression of how things were taken into possession of police.
Well, you argued that below, but the court doesn't seem to address that in the motion to suppress findings and conclusions.
No, it doesn't, and that's because, and honestly, I can't speak to why they don't address the abandonment issue, because it clearly was abandonment. However,
well, we're not going to address it if the court didn't address it, so.
Yes. But the items were collected subsequent to the custodial arrest. So at that.
But the motion to suppress was to suppress the wallet and all the evidence related to the burglary.
Yes.
And so the argument that was made below was he was under arrest because he was in handcuffs.
Well, that was not the point of the arrest. That was the point.
That's the argument below was he was under arrest because he had been handcuffed. That was what they argued.
Yes. And he was not under arrest at that point. At that point, he was under an initial detention for investigative purposes. And it wasn't until subsequent, once they had probable cause for the sexual assault, that he was then taken into a custodial arrest. And post that point is when they were able to find the items related to the theft and the residential burglary. And so at that point, post the arrest, then all of that evidence would be admissible in the trial against him for the subsequent crimes that were charged. And to speak to, and I don't know if the court would like me to continue, because I do know that the only thing addressed in counsel's argument was the motion to suppress, but I can continue.
You can
to
use
the
your
evidence.
Argument as you see fit.
Yes. As far as the sufficiency of the evidence goes, we have a 12-year-old at the time of testifying, a 13-year-old girl, who clearly stated that the finger went, quote, inside of her halfway to the first knuckle. And she marked an X on a diagram over her butt. The lower court properly ruled that that was sufficient enough to send to a jury, that there was enough to infer that there had been digital penetration of her anus. The jury also was able to convict on that. When reading the opening brief, I noted that that counsel spoke of firing off questions and that the prosecutor was trying to coerce testimony from this child. However, when you read the record, the trial court properly points to the trauma that this child was experiencing in answering these questions and saying that this witness is clearly having a difficult time. I don't know if the record reflects how many minutes we sat there with no answer to these questions, but it was enough to make me very uncomfortable. This was a child having to testify about a horrific thing, and there was sufficient evidence.
Thank you.
All right, I'd like to briefly close out the suppression question. The challenge below was an assertion that the government failed to establish that the detention was a Terry detention and that it remained only a Terry detention. My understanding of the record is that some of the property recovered was out of Mr. Montemorales' person, not just the wallet on the table. I would agree with the court that the abandonment argument should not be addressed on appeal. Likewise, there was no argument below of any sort of hybrid detention slash community caretaking experience here. I would say that there is no authority that would justify moving a suspect.
Well, so, but back just a minute. The credit cards that were part of the frisk.
Yes.
Those also constituted evidence of the burglary?
Yes.
And so the argument was that evidence should have been suppressed.
Yes, along with the wallet.
And well, the wallet came later. But yes,
all those things were recovered from Mr. Montemorales, and I think it was.
Well, I mean, they did make that argument about abandonment. We're not going to address it, but I don't know recovered. I don't know how we would address that without talking about what was argued.
Well, and I to follow up on that, is the record clear? He was frisked at the scene for weapons. They took items out of his pockets. Apparently, they put items back in his pocket. There's no discussion that I saw about whether that was the wallet or not. And then at the hospital, the wallet's off his person somehow. But what does the record show with regard to the credit cards? Are they then taken out at that point, or were they taken from the wallet? I couldn't tell.
Judge, I at this point in time, I don't remember. I can review the record and try to figure it out. The Fifth Amendment cases I cited in my reply brief are instructive in that they show that for purposes of analyzing whether someone who's been taken to a hospital by the police or by somebody else and is then interrogated at the hospital.
Was he interrogated?
He wasn't, and this is not a Fifth Amendment case. But in Fifth Amendment cases, the line of authority that this court has handed down shows that if it's the police that bring you to the hospital, and if it's the police that govern the security under which you are, the restraint under which you are at the hospital, those things speak to the idea that you are in custody. And I cited that as a persuasive authority for why Mr. Montemorales himself was in custody. The court has wondered why didn't they bring the witnesses to him or him to the witnesses. I posited.
No, I don't think we wondered. You posited that.
Well, I think it's a critical question to be asked here, and there was some discussion of whether it would have been difficult for the police officers at the scene to bring a witness here. I submit that these officers had cell phones on them. They could have texted a photograph of the witnesses or the suspect to the witnesses. Your Honor, with respect to the sufficiency of the evidence of the rape charge, if I may quickly
briefly
finish that out. The complainant clearly knew what a vagina and what an anus was. She said in an out-of-court investigative interview that neither of those bodily orifices of hers were penetrated. She stood by what she said when she testified in court, and the mark that she made when using the diagram was not on her anus or even the crevice between the buttocks. It was on the buttock itself. The law is pretty clear that we need to take a clinical approach to analyzing this evidence. And I ask this court to stay true to the record, which does not show that the government proved beyond a reasonable doubt a penetration of the anus. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right. The next.